Some say it's tough enough just being a jazz musician. But the famed saxophonist Branford Marsalis has the nerve to wear a couple of other hats. Marsalis Music is a record label he started a few years ago. The label hopes to provide an outlet to elder musicians who never got their due. After Hurricane Katrina, Branford added activist to his resume. He co-founded the New Orleans Musicians Village with singer Harry Connick Jr. In conjunction with Habitat for Humanity, Marsalis is in the process of building new homes for displaced musicians in the Ninth Ward. Through it all, Branford has never stopped making music. But he told me his business venture, and more recently his activism, have hit a few bumps.
Right now, we are in the process of going through a local battle with a lot of the people that are in New Orleans because, you know, there's the traditional form of aid, which is kind of self-perpetuating. And, you know, sometimes it's guilt-based aid, I guess. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But it's the kind of aid when somebody says, I really need some money. They say, well, here, have some money. And what we're saying is, if you really need some money, here, have a job. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Here, have a house. So when we started the plan working with Habitat, because musicians get paid so incredibly poorly commensurate to their value to the city, a lot of the musicians had credit. They have debt problems. At which point Habitat says, well, we can't give you the house right now because you have debt problems, but we have several organizations that we would direct you to depending on the severity of your problem.
Right.
And once you work that out, then you can reapply and we got it. You're cool. And a lot of the guys were just like, well, you know, man, they basically are used to the old way. They just wanted the key.
Right.
They didn't want to clean up the debt. They didn't, y'all raising money in our name, so just give us a check. I mean, it's a very old kind of mentality.
You're in an activist's role, and how does it feel to have to wear that hat, especially given the kinds of things you're just talking about with some of your fellow musicians who are not necessarily understanding how this has got to play out?
Well, my parents were activists in their own way, you know, not standing in the street, you know. I mean, most of those kind of people to me, the ones that are standing on soapboxes all the time, they just love the sound of their own voice. And they travel from tragedy to tragedy, kind of like an ambulance chaser. But my parents were always very active in the New Orleans community, trying to change the environment, and it kind of rubbed off on all of us. I would have preferred to have just started this, raised the money, and been done with it.
Right.
Because, you know, I don't really get anything out of doing this, which is a very un-New Orleans thing, too. You know, so some of the other organizations were actually spreading bad rumors about us because they're in the business of charity and we're not in the business of charity. It's just a charity. I mean, Habitat is a nonprofit organization, you know, in the real sense of the word.
Yes,
501c3 nonprofit, not nonprofit, wink, wink. Mm. But the idea of free houses, forget it. Done. It will be no free houses. And if it's on me to be the bad guy, I mean, I've been the bad guy before. My legs are sturdy enough to handle it, so I don't mind that part of it at all.
You are now a label head.
Not really, but okay.
Yes, you are. How does that change your vision, all right, Branford, when it comes to making music that has to be marketed?
Doesn't. The amount of sacrifices that you make, the reward on the other side is not commensurate. And what I mean is, if you make a jazz record and you say, well, I want to put on a Beatles tune or a Bjork tune or a Cyndi Lauper tune, how many more records are you going to sell? 100? Now, if somebody said, look, man, you put this tune on, you will sell 5 million records. I'd be the first one in line to do it. But the reality is, the music that I have chosen to play is always going to appeal to a very small number of people.
But that means as a musician, you have to be able to afford to do that, doesn't it?
You just have to make sacrifices. You put certain things ahead of other things.
Not food.
I won't. It's not that dire, man. But I won't be driving a new car anytime soon. It's little things. It's just little things.
Let's talk about the Marsalis Music Honors Series. This recording project honors jazz greats like Jimmy Cobb in a different way. Tell us what you're after here and who you've chosen to spotlight.
My manager and I were talking about the fact that the older musicians were just pushed aside and they weren't being recorded. So we came up with an idea where you take one of the older musicians, at least 60 years old, and it's us honoring them and then them passing information on to the younger guys. So the first two guys we landed, we tried other people who weren't really interested. But Jimmy Cobb was interested and Michael Carvin was interested. And they're both drummers. We just set it up from that point. But that's the premise.
Really? Were you surprised that there were those who weren't interested in doing this?
No. I mean, you know, a lot of what it is to play jazz or a lot of what it is to play art, anything, is that you get raised in a culture of defeat. You know, if you hang in it long enough, you just buy in. Like some of my experiences have been, guys will say, well, all right, man, I'll do it, but, you know, I'm not giving up my publishing. Like, I would steal people's publishing. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just, like, man, you've known me my whole life. What makes you think that I would do that? But there are instances in New Orleans of very famous New Orleans producers doing just that to their friends. So there's this expectation of jiveness on our end. And it's not really a matter of talking bad about those people, but I understand why a lot of them choose not to do it, because why shouldn't I be like every jive-ass record producer and record company owner that they've encountered in their 40, 45 years in the business?
Let me ask you about putting together a group, because it takes time, right, for any group to gel together. Mm-hmm. How long does it take for you to get the sound that you had in your head to begin with?
Everybody in the band has to be committed to playing with a very large sound and with a high level of intensity all the time. It requires a lot of physical stamina. So once I found musicians who were willing to do that, then everything else is fixable. You know, harmonic issues, I mean, harmony, you can teach a monkey harmony. But the commitment and the dedication to play really, really hard and with a lot of intensity for an hour and a half, it requires a certain level of practice.
Are listeners ready for the intensity that you want?
I think that some are, some aren't. We're starting to get a lot of rock and roll guys coming to our gigs. People who are in their 30s but still into the music that has that kind of intensity. And that's the kind of intensity that we bring. There are some people who like the style of jazz that is more popular on jazz radio. They're probably not going to enjoy us very much.
Been critically acclaimed as a saxophone player for a long time, but every musician strives to get better, right? You'd agree with that?
No.
You don't agree that musicians strive to get better?
No, most musicians strive to be successful. Once I was talking to Illinois Jaquette, I said, man, you got any advice? He says, yeah, man, find something that's uniquely yours and stick with it. That way everybody knows it's you. That's not a formula for getting better. That's a formula for self-preservation.
Well, how has your sound then changed over the years that you've been playing, or has it?
It has, significantly. Because in the 80s, I was playing with Sting and then coming back to jazz and doing other things and coming back to jazz, and I didn't put the proper amount of pressure on myself to improve in significant degrees. So musically, I was getting better. But on the instrument, I was pretty much the same for most of my career. And in the last 8 years, I started really practicing the way I used to watch Wynton practice when we were at home. I had a role model for how to do it. It was just a matter of getting off my lazy butt and doing it. And I started applying myself. So in the last, you know, 2 or 3 years, it started to change dramatically.
Branford, thank you, man.
My pleasure.
I appreciate it. Good luck with the new CD.
Thank you.
That again was saxophonist Branford Marsalis. His latest CD is called Bragtown. That's our show for today. Thanks for being with us. To listen to the show, visit NPR.org. News and Notes was created by NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium.